The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
No, you don't want to. Let them go.
Wake up! It's night! Wake up! It's night! Not just because it's getting darker earlier, but because it's later than you think. Come on down the Hallelujah Trail with me, Frank Cotolo, man whose name adorns the title of the show. Here we are again, Y2K, as October says goodbye. Cotolo Chronicles. So don't make any mistake about it. I am the godfather of internet radio. I command the family of listeners. You're with me, I'm with you. The Bard of Broadcasting is on the air. I know I'm the third man. I'm that other person who's always right behind you, looking over your shoulder, telling you, pointing out things, making sense of all that is senseless. I am that guy. Ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello. Tis I, Frank Cotolo. Cotolo. I love when I'm doing something in a store or in a place where they have to write down your names, or even on the phone, and they go, how do you say that name? Because, is that because they're afraid to make a mistake when they say it? Or is it because they actually can't? A name so simple, A-E-I-O-U, right? Oh, three vowels, and they're all, no, yes, three vowels. One hen, two duck, three squawking geese, three vowels, and they're all the same vowel, so it's only three of one vowel. Now, you can either do so, because you take the C and make it soft. T is T. There's no other way to pronounce T but T. Okay? T. That's it. L. 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 You can't say L any other way. Nothing. Not even with some kind of foreign accent do they take L out. Like they say, you know, like Chinese Orientals. Of course, Chinese Orientals as opposed to what? Chinese Italians? Well, there could be Chinese Italians. R, you roll the R over Caro instead of L. Cotolo, okay, because the L is difficult as they translate that thing. No, most of the time it's an L and it ends with an O. Now, how do you say that? Often, I try to jolt them, as I am, because I'm a jolter from way back. And I say, how do you say that? And I go, Smith. And they, because, you know, what they're saying is self-indignation. They're not blaming me. They're blaming themselves. How did I not know that? Because that's what people do. That's a human trait. You know, it's like, what? How did I not know Smith? And then you could rationalize and say, like, well, I would have never gotten Smith out of that. There's not even, how many vowels are there in the name Smith? A-E-I-O-U. Well, there's an I. And that's it. Hey, you ain't got three to Smith's one. So
So that's the way that goes. So I am Frank Atolo, and I'm, and that's how I pronounce it. That's how I say it. Don't be afraid to mispronounce it. You know, don't be afraid to mispronounce anything. You know, cause one person can't know all of the things that need to be pronounced the correct way. That's just the way it goes. On this show, Y2K plus 16 October, the personal moment of, astonishment and practically, what? Practically like shock. October. Wow. We're moving along pretty quickly. And, I'm here. We're going to have on this show, hopefully, and then everybody, everything, all the connections work, all the zeros and ones go together. And, the operating system continues and the, you know, all the things that are running continue to run. We will have on our show Hannah Pilkus and Jeremy Long. Jeremy Long, you know, from past shows, if you've listened to the show. If you don't, you don't know. That's it, period. You'll know. he co-hosted the show for a while. He's a stand-up comedian, and I'm a kind of a prodigy. I like to call him a prodigy because I do still, ouch! What is the activation period of Windows? I don't know. I mean, I'm getting a little worried when I see, you know, when I see messages like you shouldn't be here. Don't, you know, and this is a brand new, you know, if you've been listening, we got back on the air. We got back to broadcasting because we fixed all this junk up. Now more junk coming up and saying, hey, you know, as it is, there's so many, I guess we shouldn't complain. They have to make money. They have to make the billions and trillions they have to make, Microsoft and all those people. But, I'm just amazed at their productivity and their, well, you know, I don't know. Well, you know, I don't know. You see, if I only cared, Hannah Pilkus, you might know, and we'll talk about that from a movie called The Watchmen, which was, back there a while ago, and, a couple of other movies. What did I do with that? I wrote them down. I was looking at it. IMDb. Jeremy Long, of course, does stuff. Funny stuff. And where is it? And why do I even write things down, huh? And I don't even know that. I'm getting, you know, it's getting to be a very strange part of my life. I don't usually talk and have never really talked about personal feelings and emotions. I'm not one of those guys. I don't do blogs about what I feel or what I think. I rarely go political unless someone is on the show and comes on and does stuff. And, you know, I don't believe anyone. So let's get that straight. But getting older is, and I know if a younger audience, I know a lot of you are going to be thinking to yourself, that, well, you know, some people will be saying this. Oh, I don't look at you as old. You know, I don't think when I listen to you as old, because, oh yeah, old has a whole connotation to it. But obviously what I annotate and how I, things that I reference go back beyond the, way beyond the millennial audience and many who I still have there. Hi guys, gals. And I'm me personally, which I'm not going to let a lot of you in on this, and certainly those who are listening beyond. And those who pick it up, remind you to that juiced talk. And you can get that, this show, there, if you want it personally, put it on I don't put it on iPads. I guess you download on phones now. As I said last week, nobody has iPads anymore. No, I'm not iPads. iPods. There's, you know, one difference. And they're both vowels. iPod and iPad, right? People still have iPads. They walk around with huge chalkboard things that they touch sensitive, or whatever it's called. But all I'm saying is, I'm getting older and time is becoming very precious to me, only because here's what you'll find out. There's a selfish trend that goes on when you get older. And a lot of people, you'll hear a lot of people say, well, you know, I don't want to grow old alone because I want, why? Because you want to, I don't know. I don't understand that. You know, if you have to, you have to.
alone per se, but you do feel selfish. It's my time. My time is running out, is what you're saying. There's a clock on the wall says it's time to go. It's time to go. And that was the clock. And I just don't get enjoyment from things that I used to. And I think that, you know, that's going to happen with a lot of people as you go through various stages. Like 20s are different, the 20s are different than teens, and then before that, and 30s different than 40s different, 50s different. And I hope you all make it through those decades. I'll tell you that much. I know people who didn't, and that's a shame. And that's another thing, right? Okay, but why am I bringing this up? I'm bringing this up because everyone. I mean, the news reports, people I know and people I don't know, talking about this baseball World Series going on here, the World Series of 2016. And this special closeness that people have with these young guys who are out there hitting balls, and they hit the ball. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. That's baseball. Okay. And these, here are, this event just means nothing to me. And for, nothing. I mean, nothing. Beyond zero. You can't imagine nothing because the human mind can't do that. Nothing. Zilch. Okay. And so there are certain people I know, because I'm in a certain business that does, you know, brush or flirt with the idea of sport. And there are people even in my business who are not, it's not baseball, not football, it's not ball at all. There's no balls at all in it. Well, there are some, unless they're geldings, and then they're not. Then there are no balls. But you know what I'm saying? Don't you say? Don't you know? And there's tweets all over the place. Hey, and everybody owns these teams. Everyone, you know, when I was a kid, people didn't go, hey, my Yankees lost. You didn't take possession of baseball teams. You were a fan. You were one of many, and you were excited about that team for whatever reason. I don't even know. I go back. I think about a World Series when I was very young, when the Brooklyn Dodgers lost, and I cried. I remember I was in my landlord's house, and I walked into some room I didn't even know, and I cried because the Brooklyn Dodgers lost, and I'm to the Yankees. And that's a long time ago, my friends. And I'm saying to myself now, I am so distant, I am so far, I am worlds, universes away from whoever that child happened to be, and what was he feeling? What the hell was going on? Even later on in life, when I just enjoyed, then I stopped, you know, with baseball, and as a boy, you know, and then I stopped watching it and liking it. So I wanted to have this show, this particular topic, I think we're going to bring up when Tom Savino Veritas comes back. I'm going to talk some baseball because Tom still follows and enjoys and is a big Yankee fan. But I don't really know what my motivation was in those days. Was it because they were heroes and they were, I don't know anymore. I can't recall that feeling, and I can't sit down. I feel guilty, and I'm doing something wrong if I watch it, because A, it's not entertaining me, and B, I'm wasting time, and this time is more precious now than it was back then. So I'm completely, but people are, hey, how about those Cubs? Someone says to me. And I went, yay, they're little bears. Huh? They're little bears, but they're really ripping it apart. I don't know what to say. I don't care. And there's care involved. And I don't get it. And later on, in life, I gradually moved from baseball because later on, first I started, you watch baseball, you watch as much baseball, you follow a team or what have you, and it's just, and then I just started watching like the post series, and you know, cause that was where I said, you know what, this is the money game, these are the money shots, and these guys are really playing, and they're playing for money, you know, it's like there's something going on. And then of course there was the illegal gambling, if you wanted to make it interesting, which of course really did make it interesting for me. But anyway, then
Then I just, then forget it. It didn't matter. World Series and everything, and nothing. Didn't matter who these, and it was always, it's a different team every year. This is what I don't understand now, but I didn't understand it back then. Cause in the old days, guys used to just grow old in one team. And it was a big deal if one guy who was a star or not a star went to another team. Big deal. Now I don't know. I don't know who's who or what it is, but I do like one thing about sports on television. It's live. And that's all that's left, because everything is turned into videos and film and delayed and TiVo and, you know, save it up. So, you know, things change, and that's life. But but when there is this period of how many days, I don't know, a week and a half or what have you, I'm lost with that. So I don't know. So congratulations to you and your team. Now people own teams. So congratulations to your team. If it's your Cubs, all you guys get together, I'm sure. And I know you don't get a check in the mail when that happens. You know what I'm going to do? Through the weeks coming up towards the end of the year, I don't know what I'm going to do. I never do. I'm going to hope that everything works and just turn on the mic and do stuff. I will be talking to people, as I am going to shortly, and on this show, Jeremy Long and Hannah Pilkus, but I don't know who right now. I've got no particular plans going on with all that. I do want to do a couple of shows about certain things, and we're going to go into those things. I do want to do that, and Tom Savino is coming back for Savino Veritas in November. Also, the restored Dead Air, which is a, I don't even know how that relates to you unless I say it all again. Tom Savino used to be my partner in radio and television. And we produced, we used to do a show, and then it evolved into a syndicated show. The live shows and the various things we did were very successful locally. The show that failed is called Dead Air, was a produced show. Wait a second. I got to do this because I'm hearing from my, here, this is it. I'm just hearing from our guests Skyping, and we're trying to figure out who's going on where or when they're coming on. But, what I'm saying, Dead Air is a phrase, whether you know it or not, for you people out there who don't know anything about radio. And again, just like my name, it's no sin not to know anything about jargon or stuff that goes on in other industries or what have you. I sure as hell don't know about a lot of stuff that I use and am that is part of my life in terms of technical stuff. Dead air is the phrase for silence that should not be there on radio. Now that was a little bit of dead air, see? Let me do this here, right? You say, okay. Okay, in their time, it'll be 6:45. Remember, you're listening live if you're hearing my voice right now. But then again, I say that, and if you listen to it on a recording, it's going to be, all right. Dead air is what you just heard there. Not dynamic. So the idea was, we got a show called Dead Air, and we're going to do nothing but talk and make sounds and be funny and do stuff. So it's that, you know, contradiction. This is way back before, you know, and radio was just so different. It was way back when I actually followed New York baseball. There you go. That's, so you see, it's all fits in somehow or other. And there's that. We found many of the tapes. Now, when I say tapes, I mean this. I mean, literally, tapes. And then there's another thing. Do you know about analog tape recordings? Reel to reel. What a miraculous. I heard one of them that was restored. When you talk about restoring
And that is not just, well, no, it's not restoring the tape. Well, it is in a sense, but I mean, forgot his name. We'll give him credit when we talk about it. Tom Savino and I will have one long show, and then we're going to make these particular shows. I don't know how many there are, 8, 9, 10. I don't know. We're making them available for people to download and listen to. And this is really classic radio and nutty, dumb stuff. But you know, if you listen to this stuff now and you go, oh, you know, I heard that, that's kind of this and that's kind of that. You have to remember, you have to put this in its place in the 1970s before a lot of the other things happened. And so everybody should know. Radio was a different place back then. And Tom and I had a pretty good act, and we were really out there. We were matter of fact, listening to it again, two things. Number one, I'm going to talk a lot about this when Tom is with me. It's really unfair to do this now, but I want to. So let's do it now. I noticed things listening to myself, which I don't like to do. Listening to myself that many years ago, I notice Tom and I have a rhythm to us, a beat that, you know, I noticed that. So I forget about the comedy, but I do notice this. I did notice this. We are the original ADHD comedy team. And when you hear this show, even though it was written and we improvised many of the lines and did stuff while we read the scripts, which we wrote, but it is so ADHD. It moves around to so many different areas, and it's so packed with junk that there's somewhere it doesn't matter if you don't follow the story. There is a story. It has a classic. There's music we wrote for it. Songs, stupid songs. You know, all sorts of stuff that you may recognize. And if you recognize it, like, gee, that was something like they did back in 19, I heard this in 1999 from the Greegy Goo Goo guy or whatever stand up. You'll go, well, you know, this was the first. It was a first. It was an original. So Dead Air, what's left of it is being done. The second thing I want to say is that this guy who has this equipment, thanks to the digital platform, this stuff can come back and be listened to again in mono. It is mono, though, because there was big trouble with saving it. But this guy really did a tremendous job. I'm not using the word tremendous anymore, and many of you people might know why. Yes, coffee. Drinking like my father. Oh, you know what else I want to do? But anyway, so the Dead Air thing is coming back. And I don't know how else it will be aired or where it goes, but I do know this. Tom Savino from Savino Veritas, and you stations out there, you know that you can get Savino Veritas for free, as well as you get Cthulhu Chronicles free. Download it, put it on your radio station. But that's the way you do it. Live only on SRN, and then go on. And you go to our blog, GotoloChronicles.blogspot.com, and on the bottom, a lot of stations. Click them, find them, and find out when they're on or where you could get it. There's plenty of ways to listen. There's no excuse if you want to. If you don't want to, it doesn't matter how many. It could be on every single station. It could be everybody could be walking around listening to it. But if you don't want it, then forget it. You don't have to forget it. You don't have to get it. But if you do want it, plenty of places to get it. Now, this new, the Dead Air thing, so there's that. The digital guy, the guy who did it, just a fantastic job. I can't wait to hear some of the other episodes. Only one digitalized episode have I heard. And aside from one or two little glitches and, you know, sound problems, this guy did a great job. And then Mr. Savino himself, who's not known, by the way, through the years of being a producer, has done some wonderful things now with sound and pictures and digital art and sound. Art and sound. What is it? What else is there? Not graphics. I'll say graphics and sound. Who's done some wonderful things went in and did some other stuff to it. So these are going to be about as, they'll be as able as they can exist for you to listen to without going, that's horrible, I can't hear a thing. And I think it's even, I don't know if it's sped up. I listen to myself once in a while. Someone gives me a tape, or I have an old tape. There are lots of recordings of me
through the years, and I always sound faster. I sound like an, or higher, you know, like, I mean, like the speed is incorrect. And like I said, speed, I almost said speed of the tape, because tape, I wonder how many of you really know tape and know how difficult it might have been and how you had to take care of things. You don't really know how well you have it with the digital platform. Not only do you not have to worry about quality, you could make a copy and it's of an MP3, not even compressed, a WAV file, you know, and just, wow. I mean, compressed digital transfers to another, when you just make a copy, right? And like you wouldn't believe it. The same exact sound never was the case. And I think that's one of the problems. This is what makes it more amazing, that these analog tapes have been brought to the surface and are managed and are listenable. I don't even know if that's a word. Is it? And that they're, you are able to listen to them. Because these are, I don't know if these are master tapes, but they are mixed down from another tape. So the master tapes are mixed down from another tape. Splices, they never even use the word splice anymore in the digital platform, do they? I don't think so. Okay, so I'm not getting technical. I'm just trying to tell you that these are fascinating for the reason that I'm telling you they're fascinating. They are strange, and they're strange characters in there. And even if you don't get some of the parodies, a lot of television parodies, we used to do a segment of the show called Wasteland Playhouse. Wasteland Playhouse. And that, people go like, well, why is it called that? People today go, why is it called? And they don't recognize the Marshall McLuhan reference to Marshall McLuhan, who was a media guy, wrote about the media, and a couple of very influential books back in the 60s, I think 60s or 50s, maybe, I don't know. And, well, you know, during that era, well before the digital era, and Marshall McLuhan called television the vast wasteland. So we did Wasteland Playhouse, which was a parody on television shows. Now, the funny thing about this is that the television shows we parodied our television shows from way back then, they were repeated, and some of them were on, I guess, but they mostly were repeats, and back then. Now, if you watch these channels like, was it Ant TV, Antenna TV, what is the other one? Me? What does Me stand for? Me TV is, I don't know, media, entertainment, I don't know what, I don't know. You know these things where they show, like these old shows, I mean, old 60, like the Andy Griffith Show. They show Leave It to Beaver. Let's talk about Leave It to Beaver for a second. Here's Leave It to Beaver, which was I bring that up because it's my favorite. Wasteland Playhouse. And what we would do is we would parody that show by doing a little episode, not long. I don't even know how long they were. The show, you know, had many, many portions in it. And segments and themes and characters. Okay, but so Leave It to Beaver, if you ever saw some of those 1950 and 60s television shows, if they rerun them, I know they do. Or you go to YouTube, you know, where, God, you know, everything in the world is on YouTube. If you do that, we would parry. So it's a Wasteland Playhouse. So it's not like we couldn't do like Friends, because there was no idea that, you know, Friends, what, King of Queens? No, they were nowhere near that time. So what you'll be listening to are parodies that you don't understand as parodies, but they should hold up just as stupid, funny, stupid little bits. And so Leave It to Beaver became Give It to Chipmunk. Give it. So we did things like that. And so when you Give It to Chipmunk, it's, I guess if you don't know Leave It to Beaver, you could still laugh because it's stupid and funny in its own way. But that was Wasteland Playhouse. So we had regular segments. And you know what's, and what Dead Air is a produced version of shows we did live on WKRP? Well, I don't even remember the name of that station. In New York, we actually had a half hour of radio show in New York on Monday nights of all time, 11:30 or 11 o'clock.
And then we went to WPRB. Okay, WPRB was an actual station, but it was run, I mean actual station, was a commercial station run by Princeton University. We did Dead Air there, and a lot of this stuff was done live, and a lot of it was on tape, kind of like Saturday Night Live is done, you know, live, and video things and tapes, okay. So we're, so that's going to be fascinating to go back and listen to that and hear the two people who originated it and are acting in it and are here with you on these particular shows that we do here. Dead Air, that's coming. And you'll be able to download them if you want them. Something that Gimmies could never be done. And the whole story of how it failed and what happened to it is radio history. Even though some people still hate it. In the industry, we got bad reviews. You guys sound stupid. You know, there were people who were in radio who had certain voices, spoke certain ways, there was a radio voice, you know? And when people went to broadcasting school in various places, they were taught to talk like that. And even back in the days of old-time radio, which you might hear here and there, people are speaking very much in character, but they're not speaking with a, doing it a certain way, in other words, and the whole announcer thing, we made fun of that too. I'm the announcer. This is my radio voice. And the newsman, I'm Walter Cronkite, which is a bad imitation of Walter Cronkite. I was amazed. We did some imitations, but we did them so awkwardly you couldn't say, oh, that, he's trying to imitate that guy. Because it really wasn't. It was another guy. It was another name. See, we did that with names too. Am I explaining the whole thing? I wish Tom was here. I always wish Tom was here because he's a wonderful guy and I love him. Tom Savino, ladies and gentlemen. He's not here right now. I'm Frank Atoll. The man's name adorns the title of the show. Coming up shortly, Jeremy Long and Hannah Pilkus. And I don't have my notes I kept, but that's okay. Because, you know, when people come on the show with a book or whatever, if they've never been here or they have a career, it doesn't matter. I learn as much about them at the time as you do by asking questions. What are the other things I'd like to tell you? I'll tell you what. For some reason or another, it works when I tell people buy my books at Amazon because I noticed in my bank statement recently, and I haven't narrowed it down to what where, but some of the books I have are selling again, and I love that because I'll tell you why I love that. And it's not because I don't, you know, make a lot of money on these things. When, you know, what are my royalties? You know, when you talk about an actual book. I mean, that is an actual book. Well, actual as opposed to virtual. Because the books on Amazon are virtual, okay? If you go to blurb.com, you could spend a lot more money and get a physical book, which I always love for people to do because I'm all for books, okay? But on the Amazon books where you get a tremendous... I said it again. I don't like the word. I got to scratch it. And every time I say it, I have to bring it to my attention. They have a very healthy and generous rate of royalty. Only the books don't cost anything. You know, so for $2.99. Point being that I'm not so greatly excited. I'm not so excited, period. When I get on my statement, I see Amazon has sent me some royalties. What I'm excited about is that more people are reading these books. And because I don't put out anything I don't really like. And that means what I want to share as a writer is on those pages. And some are funny, some are not, you know, whatever. Or you may find the serious stuff funny. Or, ha, this guy tries to write serious. Whatever you do, it's fine with me. So when I get that and I realize that I've been hawking, because who else is going to hawk them? You know, Amazon doesn't say, hey, you know, we'll try to make your book a bestseller by telling everyone. They don't do that. It's all up to you when you're an independent. Always. Maybe it won't be like that someday, but I'm guaranteeing you this. You get those books now or as soon as you can from Amazon as digitals. And I'll tell you why. Because some things are happening, and if some things happen and suddenly a publisher jumps on future works I'm doing and takes it, and they may say to me, you know, these other books are good too, and now that you've sold well, maybe we could take these other books because so many people haven't seen them because they were sold on Amazon, blah, 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 including Man of La Mancha, Sweet Shepherd, and License to Skill, which is currently being worked on to be pitched as a TV or web series. If you get them now, you will have them, and you won't have to go out and pay whatever it is it costs if they republish them in because if they publish them, a publisher comes and signs me or something, and they take those books and make them into analog books, and then you got to go to the Amazon and buy them, you know, as books that also have analog partners. They're going to start costing money, and you're going to, there's people out there going to go, you know what? I got one of these back then. Okay. So you get them now, you don't have to get them later. And then when your friends go, yeah, I really like to read that book. No, isn't it too bad you can't make a copy of the digital? Cause I don't think you can. That's another thing. The stuff that's going on with, there's a difference between sharing and pirating. I'm not going to go into that now, but you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff involved there. My point being, if you get them now on Amazon, you're in. Also, blurb.com. You're getting Molotov memoirs and more Molotov memoirs. Getting those now is a real bargain. Available, I think it's $5.99 for the digitals, with the great artwork of Stefan Gesick from MTV and Tosh.com and any other number of places. His art and his art design. He did all the illustrations. He is responsible for all the illustrations of the book and the design of Molotov and Molotov Memoirs. If you get those in digital for only $5.99, terrific. Now that you can buy them actually, hardcover actually, but it's expensive. It's expensive now because there aren't a million of them out there. So you'd be collecting stuff, you'd be getting stuff that's going to be worth a lot of money if the rest of the stuff happens. You know, so there, you know, get a jump on it. You know, do you think that Stephen King, I don't know if you like Stephen King, I don't read Stephen King, that's not the point. I mean, he's a big seller, right? Do you think that he said, well, this wasn't his position. He wasn't in this position. He started before there were those kind of, you know, digital books and stuff. But do you think he would sit and say, maybe he would, I don't know him, I heard a lot about him this way, but do you think he would sit and say, go get my books, then the cheap books on the digital platform, before they come out and you see them in Bookbusters and Bookbinders and Bam and Wham and Dam and whatever, all the places you could buy books, Kmart, Your Mart, Cosmart, Cosmo, or whatever. You think he would say that, go get them before then? I don't know. I want to say happy birthday to my mother, may she rest in peace, because this time of year is when I talk a lot about my father, but I rarely talk about my mom. There are great stories about my mom in both Molotov memoirs. Remember, it's more Molotov memoirs is a sequel. It came out last year, and I don't know when the other one came, April of I don't know when. I have no idea anymore. Let me do that sound again from the beginning. I don't even know the sound. October 2016. How did we get here? On Cotolo Chronicles, my name is Frank Cotolo. The man's name adorns the title of the show. But anyway, thank you for those of you who might be listening and heard about the books here. There are a number of them, and they're good. There's even a book of poetry, if you like. Classic, or in regular English and classic form, if you know anything about poetry like that. You can go there too. I mean, there's lots of things there. And License to Skill, which is the biggest. Big things may be happening, even though time is running out. Wake up. It's night. We got to do a show on that again too. So remember, Tom Savino will be back on this show. I'm going to bring up my Skype screen because very shortly, I don't know if they know, it's only audio. I'm going to write this down here. Only audio.
Set up another office with a laptop that I have at another floor of my home, which is also my office and my workplace. Because I'm a freelancer, my friends. I am not a retired man sitting in a little porch somewhere. I have to say that, like I know. And lots of people know that. I also want to do a show on, I want to have some people back. I haven't had people on in a long time, including Dr. Woldar. If you're listening, Dr. Woldar, Andy, when you gonna come on? We gotta get Andy back on. We haven't talked to Andy in a long time. Heather, has Heather been on this year? I don't even know. And some other people I wanna get on the show. It takes time to put this stuff together, and I don't do that very well. I'm doing so many other things, and again, and it's not like I don't stop. I don't neglect doing certain things because a ball game's on or anything. It always has to do with something I personally want to do. Cook, because I have to eat. Write, because I have to write, no matter what. And I want to produce as much product, which is a product, is a spin-off, not spin-off. What's that called? Spin-off. What's it called? Is it a variation of a word? I don't know. But product, productive, you know. I want to do as much as I possibly can before I can do nothing, because that's what happens when you die. You can't do a thing. And there's so many different quotes about death. Woody Allen strikes me. The only thing I hate about death is the hours. I also want to do a show on, not because I do any promotions, I don't, Popular Mechanics. You know, there's still a magazine out there called Popular Mechanics, and it is fascinating. It is, it has really changed with the times, and it's great to have, right back to the analog thing. See, that was the whole theme going on here, because of the dead air tapes and various, what I was talking about with the bringing back the hardware and software of the very machines that make this show work. But Popular Mechanics is an absolutely fascinating magazine. Who would have known if it was even still around? It's changed. It had to change because mechanics have changed. Anyway, I want to do a show on that because I have a number of issues. Thank you, the Popular Mechanics people, for sending me those issues. I did not subscribe. I'm the beneficiary of many perks in my life because of the minor celebrity that I possess. Maybe that's why, people have said to me, and I know this, people very close to me said that I get spoiled. Well, I was always spoiled. That's all I wanted to say about my mother. I talk about my mother. My mother, there's great stories that concern the mother I remember and various things that went on in my life, based on, remember. And you know, I was talking about Norm MacDonald's book, because he doesn't know it, or he does know it, doesn't matter. Took an idea from me about how I create these stories of the character I am in these stories, Molotov memoirs. They're memoirs, okay? We heard about it for a week, and I think it just fell off the face of the earth anyway. So he's probably selling as many as I'm selling, which is a good, I appreciate that. Sorry, Norm. It's a tough life out there, and you've had it okay. But, you know, I've had people tell me that not only because I've said, happy birthday, Mom. I can't say wherever you are. I know where you went into the great abyss of afterwards. What they call it, afterwards or afterlife? Afterwards. There are no afterwards. But maybe you believe there's an afterwards, in which case, if you're right and I'm wrong, hello, Mom, you can hear me. Because apparently when people pass, some people believe that they look down on you. Well, I don't mean that in a bad way, Does your mind, my father always looked down on me. Now he's dead and he looks down on me. But, you know, whatever the case, Halloween and my mother, I can't go through life anymore. Not that I didn't. There was always a joke with me to tell my mother she was born on Halloween. She's very superstitious and religious in a certain way, in her own way, because a lot of people are religious in their own way. And she didn't like that. Even though there is a Halloween is actually All Souls Day, in a religion, it's a, I just had a hallucination. Isn't that wild? What is that from? Huh? I don't know. The All Souls Day, for the day of the night of the dead. And that's, I believe, where the tradition goes back to something like that. It's Dias de Muerte in Spanish, isn't it? Dias de Muerte. But in the, I think the Catholic religion, because my mother was Catholic. And she tried to make me do it too, but it didn't work out. There's, so there's stories about that wild, wacky woman who was my mother. And you'll like them. You will. I know you're going to like these things. That's the other thing. Okay? I know you're going to enjoy them. And you're also going to enjoy what's coming up. Oh, matter of seconds or minutes. Jeremy Long will be calling in with Hannah Pilkus. At International Movie Database, I tell you to go there all the time to find certain people and read more about them. He's trying, they're pushing it. For some reason or another, they're a little late. But that's okay, because we're here. My name is Frank Cotolo, Man's Name Adorns the Title of the Show, and I had a chance to sell, try to sell some more books. Now, on Lulu, you can go to Lulu, too. I didn't even talk to you about Lulu. Are there three books there? Yeah, three. I'm asking the air. It's because there's no one here, you know? It's not like my Ed McMahon. I don't have an Ed McMahon. No one's co-hosting. Nothing is going on. Lulu has these, they're thin books, and they're cheaper, and I think they're even cheaper to download. You can also download those. And the series of essays and funny things. There's a lot of funny stuff in there. And I say that because I know I've seen people laugh reading it. That's why. Is that why? Yeah, sure. It's like if you're a comedian and you're in a, and the people are laughing in the audience when you're saying things. Hopefully it's the things you want them to laugh at when you're saying them. So those are the things that go on. Now I hear, see that Jeremy Long is online. And I imagine any second now we're going to hear boop, 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 boop. Right, the famous Skype sound. Skype has been, I think it's going to happen. Oh, he called him. Look at this. He changed the name. Oh, I would never do this. Never, ever would I do this. But, you know, we it's tough when you're a mentor, because it's tough being a mentor. I know I tried to do it to some people. Because I'm old and I'm not, no, I don't want to say old. Just forget about it, okay? Here comes. Now look, how come I don't hear anything? Let's see if we hear it. Do we hear anything? Hello?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. You hear me?
Hi.
So you're hearing me?
We are hearing you.
Okay, good. That's a good sign, because
it's a good start.
Skype is just, it's just very strange. And
it is.
I know, but it's like everything else in this. Gosh damn. And what did you do, Jeremy? You changed, why did you change the tag on your Skype name here?
What do you mean?
What do I mean? I had two Jeremy Longs. And then suddenly,
oh, yeah, I have two accounts.
Jeremy, pick one.
Yeah, and then suddenly Mr. Funny Man is calling me, and I'm going,
I get two.
The first one, I don't remember the password, and I barely remember the password of this one.
So you had to start a new one? But you changed it.
It's a spam account.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because I'm going like, oh, I can't talk to Mr. Funny Man. I'm waiting for Jeremy.
I Skype on my
and, fans. And Hannah. Hello, Hannah. It is very, I know I hate the word nice, so I don't say it. It is wonderful to meet you.
It is wonderful to meet you as well. I noted. I will not say nice. Not even once.
Good. The two words that we want to, now there's three. A new one came up. Every time I say a word I don't like, I remind myself and the audience I don't like it. That way I know not, you know, I bring it to their attention. I'm not, nice is one.
They don't say it either.
Interesting is another one. We don't want to use the word interesting.
Yeah, to me, that's like, for some reason, there's an insulting.
Yes.
You're an interesting person.
Yes. Doesn't, yes.
Agrees wholeheartedly.
That's exactly the way I felt. Someone asked me the other day, what's wrong with interesting? And I went, oh, it's almost like demeaning in a way. You know, you know.
Interestingly enough, fascinating sounds more friendly and inviting than interesting.
Yeah, fascinating, exciting. That's, you're exciting. That's,
what if somebody described Cotolo Chronicles as interesting?
Ooh.
What an interesting podcast.
Mm. Yeah, well, you know, then I'd go listen to something else if you're going to put it that way.
Nice guy.
And the third one is a tremendous. I don't want to hear this word anymore for many reasons, okay?
It feels very 1940s.
Yeah, I know, but today it feels too contemporary today, considering a person that I'm constantly on television saying it, and I just don't want to hear it anymore because, you know. But anyway, I heard you were ill. You sound great. You're feeling better.
I'm feeling better. Yeah, I'm slightly immobile. I had a bit of just got through surgery about a week ago. But that's the beautiful thing about podcasts is I am sitting on my couch and able to do it. So
this will be a podcast after it's a live show. It's a live show right now. People.
It's a live show at the moment. Yeah. Got it, Jeremy.
And then it's a podcast, and then it's circulated amongst the world.
And then it's in the ether forever.
It's played back on several other stations.
Yeah, we're on twice a day, in Montreal of all places.
Wow.
And many other places, but that's not. You're not on. I'm not on your show. You're on mine. So we're going to talk about you.
Fair enough.
And it's very good. Believe me, I've been through any number of emergency things, like what happened to you. Of course, not what happened to you, and we don't have to say it. But, you know, so I know what it's like, and I've done, shows, sick and have collapsed, all sorts of stuff through the years. Oof. Yeah. So I know what it's like, but recently.
That would have made for a better story. I'm mid stand up and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Have to be carried off.
I watched you jumping around the stage. I enjoy the fact that you're that you're alive, and not just, you know, standing still. And I mean, you really bring some life to that stage. And it's, as you know as well as I do, and Jeremy knows this too, it's kind of awkward. To certain people, find it kind of awkward to be able to stand up and do that. You know, because it to some people it's distracting, don't you think?
Absolutely. I don't, you know, I thought about it and it's not even a conscious thing. I think I have a tough time being sedentary, as proven this last week. Like, I was going out of my mind. Luckily I had painkillers, but with stand up even, I can't just stand still. Like, I'm up against the wall. I'm stretching. I don't know. I think maybe it's a coping skill for a little bit of nerves, but it makes me feel more comfortable
Especially if it's natural. It's great too. I find here's something that's very sad though. Mm. You're so far away and you have painkillers. I'm here without them.
It's true. And I can't Venmo those to you. I know. Can't. I have to send it by mail.
I don't even think Frank knows what Venmo is.
Digital. Well, I don't know what. Here's Jeremy again. You got to remember, Frank's a very old man, and you know, he doesn't know a lot of these new things.
Venmo is an app where you can send money. It's awful. It's awful because you can never avoid paying your friend back.
That's true.
Not even for a moment. Oh, it's no problem. I'll just Venmo you. I'm like, God.
And damn then you it. Just have to like do an Irish goodbye and never talk to him again.
Right. Then I just got a bolt, or my phone died.
There are tons of those places now, aren't there? On the internet, web?
Yeah.
On the internet. Yeah. I like to call the internet. I enjoy saying things incorrectly so people, you know, it always gets your attention. Because I don't believe anybody pays attention to what anybody else is saying, in a sense.
Oh, no.
Right?
We're too concerned with how we sound ourselves. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so it's, so tell us this. Now, I was watching Parts of the Woodsman.
Oh, yeah. That's a great comedy.
It's the feel-good movie of the day. I hadn't seen, and I still haven't seen all of it. But what year was that again?
That was in, 2005?
2000.
Wow. Oh, my gosh. You really just showed me how old I am now. Oof.
Well, this is
24. I was 13 or 12 when I did that.
This is what was going on in the beginning of the show when I was talking about that and trying to relate again, to, you know, you're at an age that you never thought you'd make. But you were young. Was that you? You're in that very controversial scene that they always show. That's you.
Mm-hmm. Which was great at the time because I was in the sixth grade. Mm-hmm. All my friends wanted to see the film. All my friends' mothers didn't want me to come over. I just moved to the suburbs. They were so stricken by this girl that had moved from New York. And then the first thing I do is a pedophile movie. And they're like, you cannot have Hannah over. It it caused such a stir in the suburban community. But yeah, so it was the scene where that makes anyone feel uncomfortable. He is, you know, the movie's about his redemption. He gets out of jail. He's a pedophile. And he approaches, spoiler alert, 12 years later, approaches me and like kind of courts me, and I'm a bird watcher, and it's hard to watch for sure.
Well, I think that the thing I'm willing to confess is that while watching that scene, I was relating to him. That's, no, listen, oh boy, did I just shut them up? These are professional comedians, my friends.
Frank, it's been a great show.
Oh, my cat. Bye, Frank. It's been so fun.
No, you did that. You're really good. And it is a disturbing scene, but knowing it's acting, you know, we're watching, we know him.
Well, I remember when it was crazy. It was a ridiculous introduction to acting because it was the first audition I ever had. Uh-huh. And then I got this movie. So I was like, that's acting. You go in the room and they're like, here's a career. Apparently that's not how it goes. It's not quite as quick, but I was going to say, when I did the movie right before we started shooting, Kevin, I can call him Kevin, right?
Sure.
Kevin said we should hug so that I have kids your age. Don't worry. Like, this is all fiction. And it made me feel comfortable. But it was certainly an uncomfortable day of shooting for everybody.
I just wanted that to be, aside from it to be funny, I wanted it to be complimentary because you were the perfect, lovely little girl that I could imagine, that dynamic going on, you know?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I like it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I didn't want it.
And it's been a minute. You don't really get complimented on like your science fair project from the sixth grade anymore. You know? And that's kind of what it feels like to me, is like this thing from my past that I know I did it. It's just, it's so long ago. So
now, when I was 12, that's a different story. but okay.
Right.
In any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, we're talking to Hannah Pilkus, who is the young girl who is in the movie, the Woodsman back there, Kevin Bacon. And that, was he married to, Kyla Hedrick, whatever her name was there at that time?
You're a Sedgwick. And yes, I like Kyla Hedrick.
They've been married a long time, Mac.
Coming to the stage, it's Kyla Hedrick.
There it is. I don't remember her name as well.
Here's Sedgwick, who I just found out was, you know, she's the closer. She was like the highest paid female TV actress of all time at the time. Very cool. Good for her.
You mean
female
that?
Female empowerment.
Was that show on back then?
No. But it was crazy. They both signed on to do the movie and they were married.
They've been married a while. Yeah.
And are still married. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was the start. How do you get from acting? And there's two other movies I saw there on, I didn't see the movies. I saw you took part in, that was later. How long from the time you were in The Woodsman to the next movie?
Well, after that, I did several co-starring things on things like Hack and Law and Order, where I was a rape victim or things like that. I just sort of got typecast and I wasn't really sure how I felt about that at the time.
Wow.
Because I was like going to my spring fling, and then I would be going in for, you know, battered and bruised victim number three in the afternoon. So that was a weird time. I remember telling my mom, I think I'm going to like comedy more than this. And I'm really glad I had this experience, but I don't think this is going to be forever for me. And so shortly after, we like voiced that to my agent. Not that you can be choosy, but I much prefer drama. Like, it's I really commend anybody that can do that because it's intense.
Well, you know the old saying. Jeremy, tell her the old saying about...
Jeremy, tell me the old saying.
The old saying is...
Death?
Drama, schlama.
Bring on the bacon.
He's so young. Still so young, Jeremy.
He's the same age as me.
I don't know who told me this, but... And it was told me a long time ago in Hollywood, and now everybody says it, I'm sure. Death is easy. Comedy is hard.
Oh, that's the saying you were looking for.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, I said what it was.
Well, I don't know what's easier, but I think, I don't know.
I think that pretty much says it. But so why at that time when you said comedy, told your mother, I think I'm going to like comedy better, you were obviously on the brink of doing comedy. Why? What was compelling you
I grew up in New York City, and I remember...
Where in New York City?
I grew up on 68th and Central Park West in a fabulous rent-controlled situation. I only preface with saying that because Upper West was different back then. When I walk down my block now, I barely recognize it.
I went to school on 72nd and Broadway.
What? Where?
And in the Knights of Pythias building that was refurbished to accommodate the New York Institute of Technology. It was 72nd Street, and it was right off of Central Park West, which was the next block.
Of course, and there's, sure. I know the subway stop right there. Yes. Wow, that's awesome.
That's Needle Park, from which the movie, the Al Pacino movie. Needle Park is on the corner of Broadway 72nd. Anyway, go ahead.
I just remember being so enamored going and seeing street performances that were more like clowning, and I've always loved like Laurel and Hardy and Little Rascals, and that was the kind of stuff I would go watch as a kid in Central Park. And like, I remember like Moominshans types of performances, like
So
my exposure to comedy really early on really shaped me, I think. Also, my sister, who's 7 years older, always wanted to do film and directing, and I was her muse in New York, which was a dream. I mean, she'd take me around with a little camera and have me do stuff, and she would laugh at everything I did. So it was like the greatest ego boost, and sort of was an anchor for me from very early on that was like, you'll always be championed for this, you know, at least by my sister.
So, I don't remember the last time anyone on this show or anywhere else in my life said the word Moominshans. Jeremy, tell us all about Moominshans. Okay. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Jeremy?
What?
Tell us. Tell us. You know, I'm... Huh?
Yeah, Jeremy's like, Moominshans, Moominshans. These are great throw pillows.
And Jeremy's sitting there going, I don't want to say it three times, otherwise some weird thing is going to come.
Moominshans. Yeah. Red rum, red rum.
What was the question? Forget it. No, I'm always interested, and Jeremy could tell you this, because I've pounded into Jeremy when he lived here, and even now I pounded into him about roots, about, you know, listening and finding the stuff that goes beyond your lifespan back, you know. And so you're talking about things, and you have an older person. I'm sure your sister, as you said, your sister was showing you Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah.
And
My dad's Dutch, and so I think
so he always pays for his own meal.
Yeah, exactly. But also the language gap between all my family in Holland and me, things like Laurel and Hardy or Three Stooges or Little Rascals are funny no matter what language you speak.
And in New York, they were in New York, they were always on television one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and Jeremy, back out here, cause I don't know out here, kids were just watching cartoons and sitcoms?
In central Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, wow, what a shame.
Yes, I was watching some other stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, so
they were watching SpongeBob and...
Yeah, I watched SpongeBob.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I'm talking about the old stuff.
The way I describe it is like I was doing watercolors in my room with like a bonnet on. Like I did watch, you know, I just, that was definitely a big influence of earlier comedies.
So then when did you decide? Okay. Well, yeah, that's a lot of good influences. What about, female?
That was SNL at the time. And I would go ask to walk by 30 Rock as a kid all the time. Mm. That was like Sherry O'Terry, Molly Shin, and Anna Gesteyer.
What years were those? Even Tina Fey.
Those
so
were like the years.
80s?
To me, the golden years. I mean, and earlier than that, Gilda, of course. But those are my favorite years of SNL were like mid-90s, late.
Now that's mid-90s. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I remember
when we were kids.
Yeah, I was really little. And I remember one time Adam Sandler had been the host the week before, and then I saw him on my block eating Subway, and I think he was like endorsed by them because he was eating Subway in all of his movies at the time.
Oh yeah.
But I went up to him and I was like very young, maybe like 7 or 8, and I was like, you were so phenomenal on SNL.
Frank doesn't like
him. Oh shoot, you don't like phenomenal?
No, he doesn't like
it. Caught on to, well, I'm listening to her story. Go ahead.
And he said, aren't you a little young to watch it? And then my sister came in and it was all our plan. She said, I watch it with her. We had this whole choreographed bit. And he said, well, thank you very much. That's the end of the story.
And now, yeah. Because, you know, everything I talks about Saturday
night. There's my cat.
when people talk about Saturday Night Live, there's so many incarnations and so many, you always have to find out when. And I always remember, it was one night that I wasn't working. I don't remember the exact year. When did it start? Was it 72?
72 or 73.
Because I remember sitting in my apartment in Park Slope watching this first show with George Carlin was the first host.
And what did you think about it at the time?
Oh, everyone. Well, I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was pretty good. And, you know, because there was nothing else. No one, doing something live at that time had already become ancient, you know?
Right.
So there was fun enough to watch that. And what they did was, considered, it's amazing to think what they did to be considered bold now.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Know? Well, and I think it's weird. Sketch comedy, like even, there was such a large gap between any Emmys being won for it and Kate McKinnon just won, but there have been decades of brilliant sketch performers. I think still there's like confusion with it and people don't really know what to make of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird after this many years. Like, I don't know if everyone like it's respected for sure, but it kind of, I think it gets neglected sometimes or not seen as the same.
Well, I was thinking the other day, or the last time I watched it with my son, and I'm saying, you know, I went, Saturday Night Live isn't that live anymore because of all the things they have pre-taped and all the little films they do, you know? And when it was on back, there was nothing. They didn't slip off to a film. Once in a while, they had a little 8mm thing or some crazy little thing they just stuck in there. But, so much of it is prepared and taped now.
I think it's because they're trying, you have to appeal to more mediums because there's all these apps and, you know, everybody.
So female wise, who was your favorite back then? I mean, who rocked your boat to make you go like, wait, I'd really like to do that junk.
I felt like I saw Molly Shannon. I mean, to this day, Molly Shannon lives like a few minutes away. And every time I see her, I've never been so starstruck. Everything about her. I love her characters. I adore her. I think she's just truly brilliant.
What is she doing these days?
She just did that film Other People where she had cancer in the film and she's brilliant in it. And it's so cool. It was actually written and directed his first feature, the current head writer of SNL. Hmm. I also love that there's like that network that like lives on, you know, I think that's so cool.
Yeah. But you know, so many of them did not.
That's true.
I mean, there's a lot of people who really, and a lot of them didn't have, had success not based on their Saturday Night Live.
No, that's, well, for a lot, yeah, for a lot of people, they come and go. I think it seems incredibly difficult to do that every week. And that's why I admire anyone whose career has continued on.
Well, there were a couple of seasons. Now we're talking, listen, is what we're talking about. I want to talk more about you, but since this is part of your influence, and influences, so as they changed, who did you like then beyond, and who else? I mean, not just Saturday Night Live. Who else was, you looking at as like a mentor of material and various stuff?
Lucille Ball.
Wow. I'm impressed.
Tracy Ullman. I think it's amazing.
Tracy Ullman. I'm impressed. You know, she's coming back with some kind of thing.
I hope so. I love the Tracy Ullman show recently.
I don't know if that's Stars or there's so many stations and shows. Lucille Ball, who else then?
Who else? Maria Bamford currently is like my favorite stand-up comic and she just blows me away. And that ability to integrate character
contemporary
into your stand-up, which is really what speaks to me the most are characters. And I think that stems from growing up in New York and just observing people and, you know, weird nuances and all that stuff. That's my sweet spot. That's also Molly Shannon kind of thing. Maria Bamford's definitely up there for me right now as I explore stand-up more.
I guess that's why we don't have a lot of Amish comics. You know? They just, yeah. They have no, I mean.
Right. Cause what's your influence?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, how many jokes can you do about a black, cart with horses?
Horse and buggy.
You know, I did a couple of years ago, I did a Amish Christmas party. I was the host and the entertainment at an Amish.
Everyone have turkey legs?
Christmas party. And, they were you know, there's different levels of, these were the more contemporary ones. They had phones and, but they all dressed the, you know, same way. So there are, you know, cause I said, how am I going to, you know, what am I going to say? I'm going to every, you know, what am I going to do? And, it turned out they had a wonderful sense of humor, but the, you know, there's only so much you could do. So, you know, you could stop and go, excuse me, just an announcement here. Would the owner of the black carriage, please move your
horse?
You're blocking the delivery entrance and exit. Yeah, you know, and if they laugh at that, you're okay. But it's amazing of how, and you know this too, because this has changed over the years. You know how difficult it is to, you know, comedians get away with a lot of stuff. Being politically correct can really ruin your set, your old schmeal, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I you know, borderline on that all the time. It's interesting. We have Facebook statuses and everyone, we're all comedians. Like, we're able to showcase our opinions all the time about the election or a national, a disaster or whatever. And like, you know, sometimes I'm like, that offends me. That's too soon. But, you know, then I poke fun at certain things. It's like, it's tough to tell what's too offensive in comedy and what's how to be PC, because everyone's going to have their own interpretation of that.
Yeah. It's a shame in a way, because it takes, it just takes, there are so many funny things.
Oh, yeah.
People and their, you know, and their ethnicity. I can't say the word.
Ethnicity?
Is it?
Bare necessities?
Ethnicities. Am I saying it right, Jeremy? Do you know?
Ethnicities?
Ethnicities. Anyway, they're ethnic. The ethnics of them.
That was his plan all along.
Why don't you just say their ethnics? Their ethnics are hilarious. I know we, but anyway. Okay, so a lot of these female, you got a lot of, did you ever see, comedians, have you looked seen a lot of old movies, and do you know people like Judy Canova?
You know, I haven't think I've seen Casablanca. Like, there are a lot of old movies I need to see.
Yeah, I hate Casablanca.
Oh yeah.
I'm one of those rare people. I just don't, yeah, you know. I keep telling people when they tell me, you know, I go, you know, this like was a complete bomb when it came out.
Was it?
Yeah. How do these things, you know, suddenly, you know, as they go through the years, a lot of, that's a shame that things like that happen. But, these things have become classics, and then people think they're classics all the way, you know, and they're not. But I try to at least see a lot of the things people would make references
sure.
from, you know?
Well, I think that's important in comedy too. And I continue to learn that is like, if I don't have other things to rep, like if I just watch other comedy, it doesn't really give me that much inspiration. But if I start reading about weird nonfiction stuff or go to a convention about technology, that gives me a lot more inspiration. Just like being out in the world and like, you know.
Women don't go back that far in the, in the platform, or even in the movies, of course, in my silent days, all the guys there were no real funny ladies or girls
or
anything,
true.
You know?
But like, that's why when I watch Lucille Ball, I am truly mind blown. Not only is she a talented comedian, she's a dancer, she's a singer,
right.
She's like, it's like a cabaret every show. It's unbelievable.
And that's why they didn't know what to do with her when she was MGM and RKO, I think she was under contract. She's in a lot of movies. As, you know, Lucille Ball, and she plays these parts, but they never knew what to do with her. And until television, until that came about, and she met Desi, who, until that happened, but yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, she was, definitely a major, I guess a lot of women. But I remember, do you remember, and I'm trying to, and I got a name's got, you know, Jeremy knows this too. I start thinking of someone and then my name, the name just goes.
The saloon doors.
Yeah, the saloon doors. I really go, I got to ask my subconscious to shoot forward this particular name of this lady. She was in a lot of late Bob Hope movies, and she was a stand-up comedian. A lot of people know her. And she had she always wore these. Phyllis Diller! How could I forget? My God. Do you know Phyllis Diller?
I don't.
Wow.
Jeremy, you need to show me these people.
Oh, okay.
And you just write these names down or ask Jeremy.
Phyllis Diller.
Yeah, Phyllis Diller. She's one of the first real stand-up women comics.
I'm writing it down.
What?
Write it down.
I'm writing it down.
Right. Write it down.
Write this down.
Phyllis Diller. And
Frank, on Thursday, a week from today, I'm going to see Mort Saul.
When? Next Thursday?
Next Thursday.
Is he still at that little club that he's always?
Yeah.
Wow. It's amazing. You know how many years ago I saw him there? Wow. Let's not even talk about how many years ago I saw him there. He's still there. God bless him. Is he 93, 100 now? He's got to be up there.
Stop it. And he's performing?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Mort Saul.
Is he 93?
Nah, he's old, man. I'm telling you. He makes me look like a youngster. But you're going to see Mort Saul. That's good. I remember that club. I think he's been there for ages, that same place. And maybe it was a Thursday night. I don't know if he changed nights. Maybe
he's only 89.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry.
Oh, chicken.
Mort Saul, Hannah, is maybe the only living person still performing from the Lenny Bruce days. And
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I'd love to see him perform.
Actually, that's not true.
He takes out the paper.
Because Woody Allen's still alive, so he comes from there, too. Mm-hmm. And they're all getting so old. Mel Brooks, although that was old television.
Oh, yeah, Mel Brooks is incredible.
Well, then, tell us about how you... So when did you do your first stand-up, then?
Hmm.
When you decided to...
I think a couple years, a few years ago, but... I wasn't doing it consistently because it was truly terrifying. I came out to LA and started doing Second City because I remember walking through the hallways and seeing everyone that I adored on the walls. And mm-hmm. I was like, well, this makes sense for me. Mm-hmm. And I did, once I graduated from Second City, I did my first stand-up set. So I guess like 3 years ago now. And it scared me a lot. And so I kind of took a couple years away. It's only recently that I feel able to do it consistently and not, I mean, I talked to Jeremy about this. It's such a roller coaster.
Yeah.
Stand up. And you just never know. And every room's different. And it's hard to not take it personally to this day. When it doesn't go your way, but it's also like the greatest challenge in the world. And when you can overcome that, the best feeling in the world.
Do you have I always thought it would be good. And if you have some kind of material or tools, when you know something isn't going well, or, you know, like people have, like comedians have various pieces of material for hecklers, you know, they're always ready. And then when you know the place is, when you're just dying, if there was one, you know, a way you could just pivot into another area or another persona, and try that out to make it would make yourself feel better, and you might actually pick up something. You know what I'm saying?
Tends to be the best stuff I've done, even recently, is like when in doubt, and then I go to improv, and I think that I'm grateful for all the improvisational background I have, because that to me has been stronger than my actual written material. So I end up having to go back and watch the tape and write down all the improv, because that's the stuff that's not as forced. It's the in between moments where I'm like, all right, got to get them back, which is an improv. Like when you lose them for a sec, then, you know, there's endless gems. There's endless suggestions. You just start something new. Mm-hmm. And I think that really helps in stand up.
Yeah. I always thought it was, I don't want to sound professional, but it was just, it wouldn't be helpful, when a comedian gets up, the nose, he's dying and starts to reflect on that. And I thought that was like a good thing for anybody. It's not good for the audience, and it's not good for the person. You know, when somebody goes, well, you know, that worked last night with that crowd. Always like, yeah, well, it was
right.
It was funny yesterday. I don't, you know, trying to get a joke out of the fact that it wasn't, as opposed to just moving on. You know,
but it's such an easy thing to go. I mean, that's where our brains go. Is like, well, I'm gonna shit on myself, which I get. I feel that way all the time. I don't know.
It's well, that's because it's such a self-conscious thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
you
have to make it's a difficult. I don't know who teaches those kind of things, or if that's just the school of hard knocks as you go along and you just pick up what to do and how to handle any kind of audience. But it's just like the timing. When it's really going hot and heavy, you know, you have to know how to time it so that they stop, and then you get to the next one if it's going to, you know? I mean, it's as opposed
right.
to just piling it on, going, you know, because then it's just like, look at me, I'm good, I'm funny, look, you know, and that's, you can't help but feel that stuff. But
for sure.
That's not productive. I don't think that's productive. Right? Jeremy, is he still there or do you leave?
Not productive.
He's taking notes, I hope. He should always, I told him, when always take notes when I talk. To you.
Yes, Jeremy is taking notes.
I made a whole documentary about you. I don't need to take notes anymore.
That's true. He took many notes.
Well, you know, well, once in a while you should go back and watch pieces of it. And maybe, I always go back to great inspiration. And then as you get older and as you see more and feel, and, you know, as you absorb more, you only wind up with really a few that make any sense to you anymore. And there's so much. And today, Jeremy and I were talking about this a couple of weeks ago, how there's so much. Before the 70s, you know, stand-up comedy became the rock and roll of the 70s. Everybody just wanted to suddenly do it, you know? And there was room for people to stand up and bomb. There was room for people to get up and live horribly. And there were room for people like me who got in the back and sold them jokes. You know, there was room for all that.
Right.
Today, the competition is fierce, even though there's more places to play if you're willing to move around a bit.
Yeah. It's super saturated. It's scary. That's what intimidates me the most about it.
What?
For sure.
That the competition?
There's an overabundance of professional comics.
And it was always weird, not weird, but I don't know, it was always difficult, let's say, which is not a synonym of weird, difficult to be like the fourth person standing up after three people and then four more were coming. Or, you know, the old thing like, okay, you're on, let's see, there's 12, you're on 11. And you're going,
right. Yeah.
Oh, they're going to be sick of laughing by 11. What are you doing? I don't be on number 11. Like, how
first,
good do I have
two.
To be? Yeah, that's tough. It's a tough, I think that's another reason why comedians may wind up being good actors in other than comedy, you know, because they really go through the gauntlet. It's a gauntlet.
Yeah. Which is interesting because I think the common theme among comedians is insecurity, but you have to pretend like no part of you is to at least get up there. And then you can be as self-deprecating as you want, but most of my friends that are in office jobs from home are like, I would never get up there. How do you do that? You know? Like, how do you get up there when you're an insecure person? I don't know. I still don't understand. I know inherently I have a lot of insecurities, and that is what gets me to do stand-up, is because it feels like I get a strange comfort from it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, though, and I don't know how I end up there. It's just crazy.
It is a very selfish act, mm-hmm. because you just, like,
that's true.
You somehow feel, like, better when you're performing or on stage. And it's like, I don't even care if this show goes good or bad half the time. It's just, I feel better after doing a half hour or whatever.
Right.
What is the greatest fear most people have? That's gone. God, how many psychological studies have they done that? You know, speaking in front of other people, you know, being the speaking, public speaking is the most feared thing of almost everyone. I remember when I was really young and you know, you had to read in front of the class.
Oh.
And there was just no stopping the sweat, you know, and the,
yep.
I was reading, but I was self, when you're reading, when you're self-conscious, first of all, you know, you lose so much of your power. And so that right there, you hear yourself speaking, you're done, you know, you do, and it's terrible. So, and then doing any kind of comedy, I always had to get out of, one way or another. Here's what I found. And I've gotten work as a speaker, you know, talking to groups. And I still have something up there on the interweb, you know. Do you have a group? Do you have a society that has a party or something like that? Because I'm a man who knows many about many things in many areas. Please call me. I could be a speaker and inspire your group. Of course I can't, you know. But the idea is this. And this, listen, because you can use this in the future if you want to, because it's great. The minute you sell yourself as a comedian, the minute you get on stage, and especially in a comedy place, what are people going? This is a comedy place. I want to laugh. I'm here to laugh. You're going to make me laugh. This is incredible pressure, right? But if they hire you as an expert, let's say, in inter-office relations to speak, right? You get up there and a couple of keywords here and there, and then you start being funny. You see, if you don't tell them you're a comedian, they don't expect to laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get up there as a serious person, and this, let's face it, how many sketches are based on this, right? They're just mocking a serious person. So if you do that and you get up there and then suddenly you're funny talking about this stuff, they think it's wonderful that you could be such a serious person and make them laugh.
Whoa. So are you saying I should tell everyone I'm an accountant?
Well, I think
sneak in a stand-up
set? I think you could get work. I'm telling you, it's psychologically, I think it's one of those brilliant things ever. No one ever expects me to tell a joke, and then I find jokes and I tell, and I just make them roar. They love it, you know? And then the person goes, you know, I'm going to give you your check now. We never expected you to be so entertaining. Listen to this. Imagine going on stage as a comedian, and when it's done, someone says to you, I couldn't imagine you being that entertaining.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like a dream.
So that's a little trick. You get a lot of work for groups because, they always want people to talk. So you have to lie. You have to say, yeah, I know that. So what do you want me to talk about? And they say, whatever. Doesn't matter. Throat surgery. Oh, God, I know everything about that. You hear this voice right here? This voice has been operating. Now, my throat's been operating on 12 times.
What?
And they go, really? Yeah. You're lying. I'm lying, Hannah.
Oh, you're lying. See? Oh, my gosh.
Just to get the job.
The trap.
You know, yeah, that's it, right?
I never thought you would be that entertaining.
Yeah. What a, wow. You will never hear that. Certainly from other comics. Because if you're really, really good.
Oh, hell no.
Right? They're really, really good. They're going to go like, oh, yeah. Good set. Good set. I hate you.
Alone than when I with other comedians than when I have a good set.
Right. They're gonna come to you and go, "Good set. I want her dead." You know, it's like they just.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of your not a lot, but I've heard some of your sets that are flappers. I watched some of those there, I like the animating. I like that, and I like how you don't sound like you're telling jokes, so you are your persona. And I noticed that the audience picked up on that too. Who is that person? Is that a person you created? Is it a person that, where does that person, that character on stage?
Which person is this?
This is you when you're on stage. Your stand up, your sets.
I don't know, because I think it changes I think you have to be malleable, and I'm still learning how to do that. Depending on the room, you have to kind of be whatever the room is, more so. I'm a heightened version of myself. I'm extremely animated all the time. I know to a fault if I wanted to be a serious actress, because if I'm agreeing yes, I'm nodding my head yes, like aggressively. If I'm saying no, I'm just very physically vocal. People know how I feel all the time. And I'm pretty transparent on stage in that way. And however I'm feeling that day, I am absolutely going to be that way on stage. Wow. I don't really know how to.
Wow, that's.
Sometimes to a fault. Like if I'm having more of an insecure day, I'm trying to figure out how to be that more confident person on stage. But like, it's interesting. I'm going through something in the past month, and it's like upsetting, but my stand-up's never been so solid because I've been able to, you know, vent about it on stage. And that's been incredible and like made me, it's been my therapy, which is like, I felt more myself on stage lately than I have in daily life.
Mm. When you said the room, you said you, the room guides you. What did you mean by that?
Well, I'm still learning how to do this. For example, I was at a club the other night with Jeremy with like a, it was a very specific type of bar. I think if I'd read the room a little better, I might have known to talk about material that.
Wait, what's a specific type of bar? What are you saying? You could say whatever.
It's called Adults Only.
And like all the material that people were doing was pretty raunchy. And when I went into my character bits, it wasn't as well received.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's about taking a moment to take the room in and then paying that off somehow. And I didn't do that. I got nervous. And so I didn't check in with the room and I just kind of went into. I think your energy changes if you take a second to like take in what's coming at you.
Okay.
And the other, like, I don't know whether that be crowd work, a minute of that just to like break that ice. But that, I think that's super necessary. That's what I mean by being malleable. Cause if you don't do that, then it's just you standing up there and they're staring at you and laughing at you and not with you. Like, I want to feel like I can laugh with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't always feel that way when I don't check in with the room.
For instance, Frank, remember when we did a show that one time, I can't remember the place, and you said, oh, get rid of all your fat jokes because...
Oh, right, right. We did that.
Yeah.
That
you
part.
You have to read the room and then adjust accordingly.
Yeah, I didn't even realize I was doing that, but yeah, it was, we had fat jokes and there were so many people there that you know are not going to, you know, they're not going to laugh at themselves.
Right.
And they might have weapons, for all we know, these people, right? So.
Right. Well, also, like, adults only bar, you know, next time, give them what they came for.
I never heard that.
They wanted raunchy, you know, they wanted, like, three cigarettes in, whiskey breath.
This is that
time that I had sex with this dude, like, whatever, you know? And I have that material. Like, I realize, it's funny, it came out in another night.
Yeah.
It was recently when I didn't think it would come out, because I guess that was just how I was feeling that night, and I read the room, and I'm like, uh-huh, I could have used that at the Adults Only bar,
mm-hmm.
you know? So.
Yeah.
Because I'm not the raunchiest person, but if the room is raunchy, that's your job, is to go up there and do that.
Yes.
Don't change who you are completely, but, you know.
Couldn't you just stick a couple of F-bombs in the stuff you have?
I think it helped. I think I did that night. I think I could.
At Adults Only.
I think I was trying to throw
you're
in
like,
the F-bombs.
Fuck you guys.
Yeah, I just cursed them all out. No.
Yeah, well, you do have to know your crowd.
Also, your intro didn't help.
My intro did not help.
What did you say? What?
My intro was, I think they said coming to the stage, Heather, and then...
What? Say it again.
Heather, and then I think the mic fell.
Wait, I think... Okay, well, first of all, Frank, it was Andy.
And what was Andy?
Andy was the host.
Okay.
Andy was the host, and he came out, and I
loved
him.
And he introduced her as the girl with the red cup.
No, he did this here.
Or whatever.
He did this, and it's comedy gold, and I should have touched on it. He said, hey, guys, welcome to the show. I'm having quite the night. And I was like, here comes the line. And he's like, all right, let's bring out your first comic. So that was the opening. And then he's like, you may know her from Vine. She's got this great video where she's, I don't know, she's like standing and there's like a red cup coming to the stage. It's Heather.
Heather.
Like, okay. Worst intro ever.
I mean, the video with the most vague intro. It sounds like two girls, one cup, which I'm sure he doesn't know what I'm talking about with that. It just was so not. That. It was so,
see,
and I didn't address it. I got nervous and I let that.
You should have just walked up and go, thank you very much, Andy Prick.
Oh.
Which, you know, things like, you know, when you think of, you have to trust a certain amount of your, you know, your improv skills, right?
Well, also, it's a hierarchical thing where I also was like, oh, I've always admired this person. I can't poke fun at them. But I had to hand it back to him, but I didn't do that.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't have cared. He would have probably admired that I would have been like, what the fuck? You know, but I didn't do that. So it was just interesting. I saw later that that's that insecurity kicking in.
Mm.
You know, you have to, we're all equal when we're up there. And we have to, everything's fair game. Everything is fair game. You can make fun of anything
when
you're up there.
Yes, and that should be kind of the case anyway, in it, right. Although it might be more intense in certain situations. But, you know, Jeremy and I've talked about that too, and that is that you can't, everybody gets on that stage is your competitor. And if you joke about some, you know, your kin, your people who, I mean, if they don't get it, then they don't even deserve to be up there. You know?
No.
You know? So you can't be afraid. You have to be fearless even within your own tribe. You know?
It's true. Which is not always easy, but.
Well, you know, look, in all situations, you could do something and not make friends, or you have to, you know, make enemies, which is the same as not making friends. But in this particular, I could not imagine anybody, who's a comedian not getting comedy.
Yeah.
That to me what did you say that about me? What?
What's interesting about stand-up specifically though, because I love sketch so much and that's kind of a big part of the comedy that I do is like, in stand-up, if you feel defeated for a moment, you can check out mentally, and that changes your whole set. With sketch, you have to keep going. Even if it's not going well, you must stay within your character.
Right.
I wish I could remember that when doing stand-up sometimes, because you owe that to the people. Even if, they're not expected to laugh at everything, but it's not really fair for you to then check out, you know? But it's easy to. It's like if you're on a date and someone says, you know, wow, you ate your food. You ate all that. You ate it so fast or whatever. And then that insults you and then you're quiet from then on. Like, I feel like in stand up, if I lose them, sometimes it's hard to feel like, mm-hmm. stay in it, stay committed. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I'm rambling.
No, you're not rambling. It's a journey of, it's a work in progress. You're always a work in progress.
Totally.
Some people think they get there and then, and then the Gabe Kaplans of the world disappear to poker tables in Las Vegas.
Right.
What, Jeremy? You were going to try to say something here.
When?
I played my first poker game the other night with my roommate at 1 in the morning at this casino. And my very first hand, I got all queens. That's really good, right? No, I got a queen, king, ace. I had the craziest hand.
Well, you were close to a straight at that point, right?
It was insane. Like, whatever it was, I went all in and I won the first hand.
Oh.
So then I got cocky and I was like, this is great. And then I lost. And then I lost and I got really defeated.
Was
it
the time when you cried?
I started crying at the table. And I said, it just doesn't make sense to me that, you know, you all just have these chips and your money is just fleeting. And it's sort of crazy. So we've never seen someone cry at the poker table. So I'm not a gambler.
Yeah, but there's a lot of material there too.
There
queen, king, ace. All you need is a 10 and a jack. And once I pulled the 10 and the jack, I had a queen, a king and an ace, pulled the 10 and the jack. But, I folded and the guy next to me said, what are you doing? He said, why are you folding? I said, you never want to get a straight in a gay casino. Silence. You hear the crickets? And we do actually have crickets here.
Well,
thank you, ladies. Yes. Thank you. I hope you come back for the 11 o'clock show. Thank you. Good night. It's Jeremy still there? Are you taking notes, Jeremy? No.
Yeah, that's why I'm so quiet.
I think he should be taking painkillers. Then he'd really be laughing. What?
We're passing the painkillers around.
We're just doing them.
Now, you guys talk comedy? I mean, and you know, I always found this, I have a couple of comedian friends, from way back, not here, but, I always find it easier to just be myself, which might bring out comedy with people who aren't. But when I'm with certain people, and, like Jeremy, like when I'm with Barry Meadow, it just doesn't stop. It's like, I don't know, you know where to find a place to stop and just say, so how was your operation? Nothing. It just, one, it just keeps going.
Right.
You know?
Well, we were just talking the other day about how it's sometimes nice to not talk comedy and just talk about normal stuff with a friend who's also a comedian.
And yeah, and you have to, you're not gonna get your, the best
comedy. The comedy never goes away because all my friends are storytellers.
You're right.
And the greatest thing in the world. And that I wish I could just transfer everything, all these colorful stories I tell my friends. I'm like, can I just do that on stage? Like, and I mean, that takes mics and stuff. But I love that. I have all my friendships, you know, we don't feel like we're forced to make each other laugh. They just do, because I just have so many funny, hilarious.
And I've always told,
so many.
What?
So many friends.
So many friends, you said?
Yeah, so many.
So many friends. Well, that's going to change.
The more, it is now.
The more popular you get, and the more celebrity you attain, the least, you know, they're going to be dropping off the cliffs. But,
something to look forward to.
Yeah, it's a shame, but it happens. The, I have always found that, the best things, I ever come up with, come from serious things, not from other comedy. And I don't.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know what I ever learned from anyone else that isn't just, you know, an imitation. You know when you're doing something, but how to filter, how to make that, yours. You know, is the problem, but serious stuff is, I think that's all, I think some of the great comedians come from people who are dead serious, not people who are just dead serious things. That's why I'm telling Jeremy, get to do some, read some serious stuff, and you'll see how much fun, you know, if you start seeing funny stuff in there. That's material, man. It's everyone.
I do.
I know. And, but I'm saying, you know, more. Don't stop. Don't stop. I, you know, I went one time, one guy showed me when I was writing, a comedy in, writing lines for people. And someone said, go get that, Earl, you know, the Earl Bus. I don't remember the guy's name. There was some guy who had these books. He had, Bob Orban. I think it was Robin Orban. That's his name. This guy had, volumes of books of jokes.
Wow.
And when you saw them and you bought them, you went, oh my God, I'm never going to write a joke. This guy has written every joke.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And then you realize, well, wait a second. And I don't know the exact, I can't point them out, but someone eventually told me there were only 5 jokes. There's only certain, you know, you can, so this guy just rewrote jokes or put this here or put that there. And then you learn that it's,
everything repeats itself. It's just about what's your voice? What's your,
how you present it. And then that's what we're doing. We're presenting, Hannah Pilkes, in her, recuperation bed there in, an undisclosed location with an undisclosed, friend, but you know him as Jeremy Long. He's there in this quiet place, and they're not where I can't be sharing their painkillers, her painkillers. But anyway, just like you might want to make a PDF of that prescription, send it over. No, I'm joking.
He's always trying to get his hands on those
pills. Always trying to get his hands on those pills.
I'm joking. It's all part of my character, sort of. Well, that's because from the moment I came on the air after years of doing stuff and everything and retirement, then I came back on the air doing this many, many years ago because, you know, people would say, the guy sits and talks for 2 hours. What's he on? Everything. What's he on? Jeez. After a while, you go, well, I'll show you. What am I?
Yeah.
No, I'm joking.
I am. This is what I'm on.
What about, getting out there now in terms of audiences and theaters and stuff? Of course, this is, I mean, one of the real tests is, well, you know, really good here and there's a big city and it's wonderful. And then you go to Salt Lake City and you go, well, a little different here. And then you wind up at, what are some of the names of those places, Jeremy, that we always make up? Some of the name of those comedy places we make up.
The ones we made up?
Yeah.
Giggles and Gags.
Like Giggles, yeah, and you wind up in, you know, in the suburb of St. Louis, you know, on right near the border, and you're going to, and you're playing at Giggles and Gags to an audience that you don't know.
Yep.
Or you have a show on Thursday at Gaffalls.
Yeah. Yeah. And, have you done a lot out of town, New York, LA?
Well,
what?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't, I need to more. I, last year was doing social media coordinating and was doing like running all the Vine stuff for this tour. So I went throughout the South and performed everywhere that I could. And that was crazy because every room was just so completely different.
Right.
You know, Atlanta and Charlotte and New Orleans was incredible. Nashville. That was really neat.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, there's a way to be funny everywhere for sure. But it's like I was describing before, it's like you kind of want to respect, like in Atlanta, for example, a lot of my stuff did not go over as well. And I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, Atlanta, that's a real cosmopolitan place now.
It is really cosmopolitan, but I was in a suburb and it was, and I did a southern accent and I think that offended people. I was doing, and I was talking about my racist grandma. So yeah, there were certainly, I was kind of walking into, but you know what? I don't regret that because I think that's really funny and I had to try it. Yeah. And I would never want to look back and say I didn't try something because I don't find it offensive. It's true. It's telling the truth. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to go in and be like, fuck you, Atlanta, you know, but
right.
Maybe I'm not going to respond to my racist grandma from the South as well as I'd like, but I don't regret trying it, I guess.
It's even, I had the experience.
You know, killed in New Orleans a day later, you know what I mean?
Right.
So
I had the experience of doing it in doing comedy in another country, and that's really.
Oh, yeah.
Even because they laugh at you. Yeah. It's different than just laughing, you know.
Like, yeah, totally.
You want to take something personally? And was mostly in England. And you know, someone finally said to me, you know, England, what's the difference between England and America when it comes to communication? They said that's where two countries separated by the same language. And so it's really, you know, you're saying things you don't even know what you're saying, and it's a different pace, and that's why, you know, it was amazing that when Monty Python finally broke through in America, that a lot of people weren't getting anything, you know.
Yeah, I love Monty Python so much. Ministry of Silly Walks, that's my Bible. Yeah.
In the beginning, when it came on PBS, that's where it came on. Yes, it came on
PBS.
Oh yeah, it came on as it was the rebroadcast of their BBC show, which, by the way, of course, BBC is owned by the government. I mean, these guys were government workers. You know, they were making whatever it is you make, as a government, you know, £90 a week. They were doing this show, you know, for BBC. There was, at the time, I don't think there was, now there was a commercial station later on, but even when I was there, it wasn't. So they were doing all that stuff. And, when it came to America, yeah, they did it on PBS, there was a number of.
It feels like raunchy for PBS.
English sitcoms that came over, well, some of the stuff was edited, but it really wasn't that raunchy in the beginning. Mm-hmm. It was very, you know, cartoon-like and mixed, but it was the first, it was, you know, mixed with all this intellectual stuff. That's what the pretentious broadcasting system, which is what I call it, liked about it.
Frank, what did you say the show you did in a different country was your worst performance?
Mm-hmm. Would I say?
Yeah.
I don't sit back and think. I don't sit back and think about good.
That's good.
I don't have that. Yeah, I don't have that. Because you know, basically, I think I'm just horrible. So anything that comes out positive means I had a good
shock.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a man of great expectations when it comes to that.
We were just talking recently about bad shows, Hannah and I.
Which show?
And I said, remember that show that we did? When I was going up in between bands.
Oh, right. Yes.
We were coming up with great stuff, great improvised stuff in between,
God.
While the bands were playing, and they didn't want any of it. They didn't like any of it.
They just didn't get some of that. I, you know, again, That doesn't mean it's bad stuff. That's what you really have to worry. I mean, that's where you really have to deal with it. I mean, aren't you like, we all know, you know, Hannah, Jeremy knows, and I know. When you do a good joke, and you got it, or you write down, or something, you just get this, you know it's good. Right?
Oh, yeah.
There are things you just know that are good. And there's times when, like you said, Jeremy, was that your worst? It is some great material for English people. Because they didn't get it doesn't mean I throw it all out, you know?
Right. Like, you have to know that, yeah.
You walk away from some performances and you go, God damn, that's still good stuff. I'm sorry, you know?
It's just hard to remember it in the moment, but for sure. That's why you have to record every show. At least tape record it. Who has a tape recorder? I record it on your phone.
Audio recording.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, these days you could record. I mean, one device.
It is crazy. Like you couldn't do that years and years ago. You had to just like keep going up and remember and write it down. What was your best stuff? And now there are so many ways to remember and to, you know, there's kind of no excuse to not have a memorized set. There really isn't.
Yeah.
Unless you're a procrastinator like moi.
And you had, What is it with the vines? You were big on in Vineland there for a while?
With 5 minutes to spare.
I was. Vine went under today, though.
Really?
Isn't that crazy? Which I knew eventually it was like going to be the end of an era, but that was incredible. It was so cool to get to use this platform to test out characters and jokes, and then people would come to stand-up shows. I had this following of people, which was unbelievable. It's so hard to get that. As you know, just doing shows. It's so easy. You can only beg your friends to come to so many shows, but in its prime, I felt really connected to so many new people. Isn't that how we met, Jeremy?
Yes.
Through Vine.
Are we keeping you up, Jeremy? Do you need a nap or something?
It's 7:51. Jeremy really has to go to bed.
7:51.
Well, I should have been in bed at 6. What is happening?
He should have gone straight home from work and gone to bed. He has to be up at 8.
No, I'm okay. What's up?
Well, apparently not you. But we'll continue to... What do you do now?
We happen to do the show on the exact day that they announced Vine will no longer...
Which is crazy. Now I just got to get everyone to follow me on Instagram.
Is that what's replacing it? Well, Instagram doesn't have... Oh, yes, it does.
Which I love. It has a longer video function, which I like. Because Vine is 6.7 seconds, which was really cool initially, but I don't really remember how to be funny for only 6.7 seconds anymore.
Are all our Vines gone, Jeremy, or do you have them stored somewhere?
Oh, our Vines?
Yeah.
No, they're all still on there, and I still have them on my phone as well.
Oh, God.
Rick and I made some pretty great vines.
So Instagram is where people are going to go then? That's going to be around for, is that?
Instagram will be, Instagram was around before Vine. They just didn't have a video format.
Well, what's the one that where things disappear? Is that Snapchat?
Snapchat.
Is that still around?
Mm-hmm. Frank doesn't have a smartphone. So he doesn't have
With Vine gone, well boy, there's a whole legion of perverted people out there who are probably really out today.
If you're familiar with the term dick pic.
Oh, really? Was that the term? Is chat roulette still available? Do they still have chat roulette?
God, that was just the worst.
I know.
Friendly face dick. Friendly face two dicks.
Two friendly faces.
Two little dicks. I should be the next Ralphie.
I did.
Line of work.
I think I remember. I don't know if I did. I think I did it on the show one night. Oh, this doesn't matter because you can't see.
Can't see.
But I was like, I couldn't believe. I just can't believe. I just could not believe this. Is it still around?
I guess. I think so.
Then nobody wants to say, oh, of course, because that would mean you saw it. Why don't I just look for it? Like, I'm asking, like, yeah, well, I know it's around, but I'll ask them. I don't know. I have no idea. We got a few more minutes here. And I hate to, because I don't think of this either. And when I was younger and I thought of it, I realized what a waste of time it was, but it takes a long time to do that. But because I'm not goal-oriented. I just do things. What do you see? Do you have a path? Do you feel like you want to be what? You want to do more acting? You want to get what? What about this career of yours?
I loved 30 Rock. I want to be a part of a show. I love Christopher Guest. So I have two dreams. I would love to be a part of a show that I got to write on and be in right. A character that I wrote that I love with an amazing team of writers with me and surrounded by and cast alongside all of my funny friends. That would be a dream. Also, like Best in Show, something like that, where yeah. We get to use our improv skills to create this amazing franchise.
Yeah, imagine, yeah.
I mean, that's the dream. It's something like that.
The word is an entourage. What's the word for it when a person uses, oh boy, I should know this too. You know, in that same, the same people. It's not an entourage. It's a, what is it?
No, what is that word? I don't know.
Is there a word for it?
Do you know what I'm talking about? It's like,
like Adam Sandler's Usual Crew and.
But yeah. I think that's so cool. Like, you really do see people come up in comedy together. And that's my dream. Because I have so many incredible people I've been able to work with and we all just keep getting better, I think. I know that. I know because if I watch videos of me a few years ago, I'm funnier now. Funnier now, same. As are they. So just to continue to work with these people and to get paid to do it, like a lot more than I'm getting paid right now.
I was with a troupe called War Babies many years ago and it was fun. To do that, and everybody went on to do this, that, or the other thing, but it never got into that. Because that's like getting, into a, I wish I could remember. See what's wrong? How could I not remember the name? He has I know, cause when David Mamet was the playwright in residence in Chicago, they were the same people, and when he started making movies, he started using the same people.
Yeah.
Yeah, Macy, Joe Mantegna.
I love Shameless.
Yeah, Bill Macy and David Mamet did a lot of stuff together.
Joe Mantegna came from that. Al Pacino came from that era. But anyway, yeah, I almost had it. It almost came out of my ears, but it didn't. Well, we do, I'll tell you what, let's talk again. You get better, get well.
Thank you.
Get well and keep us in touch with what's happening and we'll learn that from you. We'll learn from Jeremy and from Facebook. We'll be in touch and just to take as long as you can and write funny stuff while you're recuperating.
For sure. There's a lot I got to write down.
And be well. And
thank you so much for having me on. This was so fun.
Well, hey, we'll do it again. Jeremy,
yeah.
You can go sleep now.
Night, Jeremy.
To run,
but I was asleep like a half hour ago.
Okay, got Jeremy Long and Hannah Pilkus. I wish I had applause, but there's no one here but me. And some people think that's no one anyway. We'll talk.
Where's
Mrs. Erswhile? We don't know. Well, wherever she may be, we'll find her shortly. Okay.
All right.
Good night. Thanks for now. Take care, people.
Bye.
Talk to you soon. There they go. That was quick, as it always turns out to be very, very quick. Am I supposed to do this? I better. Better? Three different clocks. How do you time it out, huh? I don't know. How do you do that? My name is Frank Atolo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show. I am the bard of broadcasting. Whoever else you listen to in any way, shape, or form, be it a podcast or radio or shortwave, long wave, new wave, or old wave, remember, I started it all this way, that way. Good night, Mrs. Erswhile, wherever you may be located. I do have to go now, and I will be back in November. Soon, I even have an announcement next week too about some other stuff going on, but you just listen. Juice Talk and the other stations, controllerchronicles.blogspot.com. Good night, Mrs. Erswhile, wherever you may be located. Why am I leaving everyone altogether? Because I have nothing more to say.